Okay, could you introduce yourself and tell me who you are and when you were born and where you're from?
Okay, my name is Charlene Marshall. My maiden name is Jennings, and I was born and raised in Osage. I was born on September the 17th, 1933. My mother and father, was Charles Jennings and Christine Jennings. My mother's maiden name was Jenkins. My father was killed in the mines when I was about 6 years old, and we had five children in the family. My mother was expecting, and then about 5 years later, my mother married again, and then we had another sister. And when she was 4 years old, my stepfather was killed in the mines. So my stepfather was Ollie Cranford. So then my mother's name was, most people remember her mostly as Christine Cranford. And my oldest sister went to Cleveland and finished high school. And then my second oldest sister, then when she finished, she went to Cleveland. And they worked for the telephone company. My older sister became an engineer for Ohio Bell. But we just grew up right there.
So there were seven of you?
Yes. Five girls and one boy. I mean, six girls and one boy.
Wow.
What are some of your memories of growing up in Osage?
Just of, I guess, as a early grade school was the different schools that we had scattered throughout the area for African American students, and then going to the new school when Floyd B. Cox was built, just doing the shopping right there in the area. We didn't go too much to the company stores. My mother wasn't fond of shopping at the company store. So just doing that and going to the theater at Osage. And as we got a little bit older, learning our way around in Morgantown and coming to Morgantown to go to the movie and so forth. But my grandmother lived there in Osage and then up towards Purse Glove. And we always had a lot of family coming in to visit from other places, from Pennsylvania and Ohio. So it was, from what I can remember, for me, it was just a good childhood. And so many people were asking about the things that you didn't have. And I thought, well, if you didn't have them, you weren't accustomed to them, so you didn't think you were missing anything.
Right.
So, but it was a good childhood.
Mm-hmm. And were your parents' families from Pennsylvania and Ohio?
My father's family was from South Carolina, and he had a brother in Pennsylvania down at Brownsville, and we would go there sometimes, and that uncle would always come to here to see us, and he would always make sure he came for Memorial Day. Well, we just thought that was just our time to go to the cemetery, and I guess as a kid, I didn't think anybody else went to the cemetery that day but us. But he would come, and we would go, and he always drove a Buick, and we would go to the cemetery with him. I never met my father's family, his mother and father. Probably, I don't remember, I probably met his dad when my father was killed in the mines. Of course, I was so little, I don't remember that. But I never met my paternal grandmother. But he was from Pennsylvania. But on my mother's side of the family, we had relatives also in Pennsylvania and Ohio. And I think, then we had one aunt that lived in New York. So during the year, different ones of them would come, and it was just always a big happy time. And, you know, my grandmother would do a lot of cooking and so forth. So it was just a happy time for us.
And did your grandma live with you?
No. She had her own home. And then there's one place up past Osage. I'll have to show it to you sometime. And it was coal mining houses up there, and they've all been torn down. But she lived there. And then when they were getting rid of those houses, she had to, of course, relocate. And I think that was a pretty tough time. From what I, now that I think back, of course, it was just a joyous time, like for us. When I stop and think about it now, that had to be a rough time for her to find a new location because the coal mines was getting rid of those houses. But, and then she eventually, then she lived with my mother's youngest sister, and she lived there until she passed away.
Did your mother work outside of the home?
Before my father was killed in the mine, she didn't. So that had to be very rough for her to go to work after that because my father was killed, and then my youngest sister of the Jennings family was born in July. So I guess I don't really remember when my youngest sister went to live with my grandmother, but of course she took care of her. My mother, you know, had to get a job. The funds for families was very little. And so then everybody pitched in, and we all had things to do, with someone cleaned the house and someone did the cooking. And I always say I did the, I guess me being the third child, I think they always thought you were going to have a boy. So then I did the wood, cutting the wood and carrying the coal and so forth.
And you were talking about the school, the new school that came in. Was that an integrated school?
No.
That was a middle school? Or?
No, it was a grade school from first to sixth. And it was out in Osage. We have some pictures of that where it was located. But no, I never went to an integrated school.
Okay. So people always talk about Scott's Run and how it wasn't segregated and, you know, everyone lived together. And I was just wondering, was that your experience?
Sometimes when I think about some of the places that I guess we never thought about it being segregated. But when I think back to some of the houses and some of the, probably at that time, probably some of the nicer houses, I think to a certain extent there was some segregation because there was, I can think of several places that I could make you know exactly where I'm talking about, that I never knew African Americans to live in. But for the most part, in the coal camps, you maybe had, you know, black, white, whatever, living there. But there's two locations there that I always thought the houses seemed to be a little bit nicer, but there was no African-Americans living there when I grew up.
So then where did you go to high school?
Over Westover. The building is still there. It was called Monongalia High School, and it was constructed in the late 30s for any African-American student in Monongalia County. So wherever you lived in this county, African American, if you went to high school, that was your school. Okay. The building is still there.
So Miss Sarah went there as well, I think?
I'm sure she did. Yeah, yeah, that was the only high school in the area.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then you went to college. Did you go to WVU?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
That was segregated also.
Okay.
The only African Americans that went to WVU, if you went to WVU, you had to be a graduate student. And just recently, I saw where they were honoring a young man who, as far as I know, and it's kind of sad because probably there were some written laws that some people didn't know about, especially if you were someone that, or if no one in your family had ever been to college before. But evidently, it was unwritten. There was a written law that very few people were familiar with, that if you desired a occupation or your choice of classes in college that no other school in West Virginia offered you, that was, we had Bluefield State, West Virginia State, Storr College. If none of those were African Americans, if they didn't offer those courses, WVU would have to accept you. But sometimes I know that different, I know of one lady who went away from here to go to nursing school, and some of the nurses in this area, Caucasian, helped with her education. But there was one young man, and I didn't realize until years later, that came to school here as a freshman. He was he wanted to go to school journalism. And he, when I was in high school and he was in the university, I just thought he was a graduate student. I guess anybody a couple years older than me just looked like they were old. So, but it was years later when some of the other people were telling, said, no, he came here as a freshman. But when we were working on the Center for Black Culture and trying to get some of those individuals to come back, mm-hmm. he did send us a copy of the letter he always kept when he was accepted to WVU, and he said he even kept the envelope. So he came here, and that had to be in the 50s, but he could not stay on campus, so he had to stay with a private family. Oh. But he was a freshman. He graduated, and it's something because some of the things he couldn't do, of course, he probably couldn't go to the dining room or anything. But later, I guess he was such an outstanding student, later he became the president of the School of Journalism alumni. So he was evidently an outstanding student.
Right. Yeah. Right. So where did you go to college?
No, I didn't finish. I went to Bluefield State. And the only reason I was able to go down there, a family had offered me, because we didn't have, you know, the money, a family there offered me to live with them and help with the house and so forth. So I was only there for a short time, and then my stepfather was killed in the mines while I was there. So I knew that was the end.
Wow. So that brought you back, and you were helping your mother?
Well, not, I was home, and of course I would always have found a little job someplace, mm-hmm. because back then about the only place you could find a job or any kind of work you wanted to do was working for doing domestic work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then soon after that I got married.
Okay. And then what did you do in your working life?
Well, for the most part, up until the 60s, it was domestic. Mm-hmm. And then with the civil rights movement coming along and so forth, and then they were beginning to accept applications. Of course, it was all kind of plants around here, glass factory, mm-hmm. shirt factory, and all of those things, and Sterling Fawcett. And people started talking about the fact that, why don't we put some applications in? So another lady encouraged me to go with her. We put an application in at Sterling Fawcett. And I always felt a little bit bad about this. She talked me into going, and they hired me. So, and I stayed there. I remained there for 15 years.
Wow.
But then later, she was able to get on. But if she had not encouraged me to go, I probably wouldn't have gone.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Were you involved
At all in the local civil rights movement?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And then I'll have to show you some things on a
project
that I did. Because it was, you know, no restaurants, special seating in the theater, mm-hmm. and those places did not want to serve African Americans.
Right.
So there were several individuals at the university, and one lady is still, she's retired, Sophie Peterson. And Sophie was active with me on this. She and her husband, and not just the two of us, there was many others. But when I first met Sophie, it was because she and her husband came here as, they were both Dr. Virgil Peterson and Dr. Sophie Peterson. And they would treat their students to a dinner or an outing or something, maybe dessert, mm-hmm. For a special project they had accomplished. And so many times they were told, you know, but you couldn't bring any African-American students. Mm-hmm. And she just could not believe that. So some of us worked together trying to break that down. There was one restaurant one in particular that we worked together on. Two individuals had invited my husband and I, we knew what we were getting into, to go to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And these ladies had a membership and a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And we made sure we were there right on time and dressed up and so forth. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the door, they didn't want to admit us. And they explained, well, we have a reservation, we have membership and so forth. But the other plan that we had was the Petersons were going to an event at the university that night. Then when they finished, they were going to go to the restaurant. Well, eventually, after a while, they let us in, put us upstairs. It was a cold winter night. There was hardly anybody else in the place, but we were put upstairs. When we finished, I let them know that, you know, we enjoyed the meal and that my husband and I would like to have membership also. And the guy told us, well, we don't have any, right? And again, we knew what they were going to say. So I thanked him. He said, but he'll let us know if they have any. Now, he didn't know me from no one and didn't have my phone number or anything. We left. We went home. I went home with the other people, and we start filling out our complaint for the Human Rights Commission. The other couple come by later. They went to the same place, no membership, no reservation, and they were seated immediately, and were given an application for a membership as they left. So those are some of the things that we had to do. At different times, different places around town that did not accept everybody, different groups would go, maybe a Caucasian couple and take an African-American with them and let them know this is what we intend to do. So that was one of the ways that we went about breaking down things and so forth. But it was an interesting time doing that.
Mm-hmm. And about what year was that?
Oh, late 60s.
Uh-huh. And then when did Morgantown desegregate their schools? Well, I guess they did with,
Yeah. Morgantown, there was not, well, was probably one of the first places, I don't know if they were the first place in the state, but for the most part, except for the southern part of West Virginia, you didn't have large communities of African Americans, and it just blended, you know, right in. Now, I'm sure some of the students, if you would talk to some of those individuals who went to school at that time, like I could think of a number of people who maybe went there in 10th, 11th, 12th grade, I think it was pretty hard for them fitting in with this group, because here you only had maybe, you know, a small number, because the classes, if there was 20 students in a graduating class at Montgomery High School, that would be a big class.
Okay.
So when you start splitting people up, you know. But they went, and when I think of some of those, I forget what age, maybe some people probably like in their late 60s now, they went in first grade, so that's all they knew.
Yeah, okay.
But some of the others, when they were like 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, I think it was kind of hard for them, but they went right in. But down in the southern part of the state where they had large numbers, it was a while before they were able to get everybody, you know, integrated into the schools.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been working on a project about, is it about the history of black schools in West Virginia?
In Montgomery County. Now, there is a lady, I did meet a young lady, I went to a class at WVU about a month or so ago, and I showed them what my project that I did. It's only from my memory, from what I went through, and I'll share that with you. Also, so then later on that week, another young lady was coming who had been a student here that I knew when she was in undergrad school that I almost had forgotten, but anyway, and she is doing her, she's getting her doctorate, and this is her dissertation on this, and she's doing it about the whole school, about the whole state, rather. And it's so interesting. She talks about the governor at that time and how, you know, it's really some positive things. So I really enjoyed, you know, seeing her presentation.
Local politics?
Well, I, first of all, it's something I said I'd never do. I thought I would, when people would try to encourage me, I thought, oh, I would never do that. When working at Sterling Fawcett, I became active in the union. And it's probably something that I always thought I would love to do. If I could have a voice to help to make things better for other people. I knew what we went through as children, and I know that, of course, my dad was a United Mine worker, and I just believe that some of the benefits and some of the things, although not everything is going real good right now for some of the retirees, but all the benefits that they've been able to expand on is because of the union. So I always thought, well, I would have. But then when I first got the job at Sterling Fawcett, and I guess I was mostly thinking about United Mine Workers, and I thought, I don't know what the union's going to do for me. But, you know, but the job that they were hiring for, it was a union job. So I became involved in that. And as a result, so many times they wanted us to, would encourage you rather, to know who your delegates were, who represented you, because these are the people who are making the laws for you. So as a result of that, I started years ago. I wouldn't go all the time, but I wanted to know who my delegates, who my representatives were, city council or whatever. So then as it came on down many years later, there were some things going on in the area that I lived where some of the houses needed some repairs, and when the older people would pass away, the younger people weren't there to, they didn't, you know, they moved away, so they didn't come back to take care of those houses. So some of the people in the neighborhood where I was living, and we talked about this, we need to have some repairs on some of the places. So we formed an organization, and then I told them that we need to have a president and a secretary. And everybody kept saying, well, you're the ones doing the talking. Why don't you be the president? Well, you know, they always say if you talk, you're it. But so then we had a young lady was our secretary. She typed up letters that we all put had input in that. And we took those to city council to let them know about our area, which they already knew. Mm-hmm. So then I guess some things about that came in the paper, was in the paper. And then people from other areas would call me and say, well, could you help us start an association? So there I was going from community to community, helping to start an organization. And then there was a group in Morgantown called Cleanup. And that was probably late, I'll say late 80s or maybe in 90s, really, because the election that I first was in for city council was 91. So they were trying to find people from each ward, there's seven wards in Morgantown, to run for city council. So I was notified that they wanted to know if I would, you know, they'd like to interview me to be one of their candidates. And I thought, I'm not interested in that. And a lot of the individuals in that group was from the university, some from the law school and so forth. So they wanted to make appointments and try to come and talk to them. So I just thought, I would not do that. Well, long story short, then one lady kept asking me to come and go for the interview, and I said no, 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 and it was on a Saturday, and I was busy. So finally, after she called me about the third or fourth time, I thought, okay. She said, I'll pick you up, you won't even have to drive. And so I went out for the interview, and we interviewed together. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the other lady was chosen or maybe didn't want whatever, but later on I got a call that they wanted me to be their candidate for the sixth ward. And for a long time after that, I continued to say no. As a matter of fact, Delegate Barbara Fleshire met with me a number of times, and I thought, no, I can't do this. But I got, one evening, I come in from work, and a gentleman called me, I guess I use that word loosely, and he said he wanted to talk to me. And when he started telling me what he wanted, I said, sir, let me tell you, I just come in from work, I'm fixing dinner, I don't have time to talk to you, and don't think I hung up on you, but the conversation just ended, and I hung up. Well, he lived in Suncrest, and he drove across town to talk to me.
That night?
In about 15 or 20 minutes, he came right over, rang the doorbell. And I said, I thought I told you I didn't want to talk to you. So he told me that he had a slate for my ward. No, he had a slate for each ward, and I wasn't on it. And he did not want me to. And I thought, that's kind of ridiculous for one person to think they can control who's going to run for office. And then after that, I received four phone calls from Caucasian men telling me that I should not be a candidate because a black woman couldn't win in this town. Wow. So my thought began, if they think I can't win, why are they worried about it? And, but the gentleman that came across town to talk to me, he told me that he had all men on his slate, and that they had all picked themselves up by their bootstraps, and their fathers had been killed in the mines, and he did not want me. So what had happened was the word had gotten out on the street that I might be a candidate. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even decided yet. So that got me to thinking. But after those guys called me, and I thought, that's it. I'm doing this. Because I don't. Yeah, I thought, don't tell me what I can't do.
Right.
So they really pushed me over. But I've always thought later years after listening to Dr. Phil, Dr. Phil always says that his dad told him that never pass up a good time to keep your mouth shut. And I thought, those guys passed up a good time to be quiet, you know.
Right.
So after all the other things that happened, and then with that, then I thought, I'm getting in there. So, of course, cleanup was well organized and did a great job, and we worked very hard. And I've always thought that, although I was active in the union at Shirley Fawcett, I had been active in the bowling association, so I knew a lot of people from different places, and I guess I was always getting involved in something, whether it was taking this class or that class and so forth. But it was really probably one of the biggest city elections that I can remember, because I think they had like 28 or 29% turnout for that city election. And today, those numbers are much lower than that.
Yeah.
So I had, I think, four guys. And my top opponent was the sitting mayor at that time. He had been mayor 5 times.
Oh.
And so then that election, that was a big election, mm-hmm. big election. And, of course, I knew nothing about, could get out and talk to people and so forth. And there was one lady that made our signs for us. She made everybody sign that was in cleanup and so forth. The disclaimer on the signs, I knew nothing about that. But it was pretty exciting. And there's several people who said sometimes, well, one former councilman at that time said, one of these days he's going to write a book, because that was historic. What happened there. So cleanup had, I think maybe 5 candidates, I think, but they, 5 or 6 maybe, but they won all but one seat. We had five or six new people go in at that time. I forget the exact number, but it was quite, but that's how it happened. So then I was, several people had said, of the newly elected people said, if we're going to make a change at this time and to show people we're going to make a change, you should be the mayor. And I thought, I can't do that. I cannot be the mayor. And they kept saying, yeah, yeah. But Helene Freeburg was a council member that was elected that time. And Helene was the one that nominated me. And I kept thinking, oh, I'll be too scared. I can't do this. And the election's in April. The city council is seated the first Tuesday in July. The city hall was packed. People were sitting on the floor. But everybody had, before the election, had just been so determined they were going to make some changes in there. So it took about 6 or so ballots. Of course, you need 4 votes to look at it. But this time, my heart was just jumping, about to jump out of my mouth. So finally, on that last ballot, and I got the 4 votes that I needed, and the place just erupted, went crazy, just went crazy. And then I thought, I'm so nervous. And at the time, I was thinking, now why don't we just adjourn and go home and come back next week? But by that time, the city clerk and somebody else was moving my things up to the mayor's seat, and I was thinking, I don't know if but you know, if it had not been, and I think it's so important sometimes, of course, when you, different things that you learn is very important, but I had been the president of the Morgantown Women's Bowling Association, vice president for the State Bowling Association, and then active in the unions. Because of those things, I had learned a little about parliamentary procedure. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been for that, I don't know what I would have done that night going up there, you know.
Right.
But someone told me later that some people in the back of the room who were not my, I was not their favorite, said, now what's she going to do? She probably doesn't know anything about parliamentary procedure. But I really, you know, fooled them, because I did know how to process, you know, the meeting and so forth.
Right.
But that was my first, and I, got the meeting going, and after a while, I thought, oh, you know, we've got to take a break. So I took a break, and of course, the TV, this was a big, a lot of people had their eyes on Morgantown. I remember a TV station out of Clarksburg. They had a satellite dish set up in the parking lot, and everybody was waiting to see what happened in Morgantown. And so they said, I called for a break and a recess. And they said, we need to go on the air right now. So I went out in the parking lot, and they were just ready to, you know, to interview. And I always remember that one of the guys, the guy that was interviewing me on the TV, he said, well, we want to know, how are you going to do this? He said that, because I guess a lot of people had always thought that you would never elect anybody on city council that was connected with the university. And that had been something had been you'd heard for years. He said, how are you going to do this? He said, you're elected the mayor, and here you are, a university person. I said, stop right there. Mm-hmm. At that time, I probably had been to university maybe 6 years, I think.
Oh, so you were working at the university.
Yeah, I was working at the university. I said, let me tell you one thing. I've lived in this area all my life. I've been at the university for 6 years. And I don't like that title, you're a university person. I said, I'm a Morgantown person right now. And my job will be to connect the community and the university, and we should be working as one. But at the same time, there was Ron Justice, who is still at the university. Frank Scafella was in the Dr. Frank Scafella in the English department. Helene Freeberg, her husband was a law professor. So there was four of us with some connection. And I believe that we did a terrific job, and we really turned Morgantown around and start growing, you know, from then on. But I did, and then I let him know right away. I said, I've lived in Morgantown most of my life, but I was born and raised in Osage. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't want anyone to think, well, she's not going to say she's from Osage, but that's the first thing I said. But so that's how it all got. So then I... at the time, some of the things that was happening that was making history, I had no knowledge of it, never thought about it. But later on, there was a young lady that went to the same church that I did. At that time, I was going to St. Paul AME, and a young lady, Dr. Carolyn Bailey, sometime later, she said, Charlie, she said, you know, I think you're the first black woman to ever be a mayor in West Virginia. And I thought, oh, I don't know. Well, she sort of checked it out, and sure enough, I was. Of course, was the first African American to be on Morgantown City Council. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to be the mayor for 1 year. 1 year, that's it. Well, you go in July, and about, when you get up to May, and I'm thinking, I've got two more meetings, and that's it. And there were so many things going on, I thought, no, I'm going to try this another year. Well, it turned into seven. So at the end of that time, then the city clerk told me, she says, do you realize that you've just set a new record? What do you mean? No one had ever served as mayor more than 5 years in the 200 history of the city.
Wow.
So I had set a new record. So it was pretty exciting time for me. And by that time, I had tossed my hat into the ring for the state legislature, mm-hmm. and I had won the primary. And then different people kept saying, well, why don't you just go ahead and resign? I thought, if I don't make it to the legislature, I'm going to stay on city council. And for me just to jump up and resign, like, I know I'm going to go.
Right.
I thought, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And I thought, no one's going to tell me when to leave anyway. Mm-hmm. So primary was in May for the legislature. Then July, time for a new mayor. Mm-hmm. I nominated... Frank Scafella, and he became the new mayor. And then after the election in November, then I resigned. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the legislature for 14 years.
Wow.
So I've always said that I gave 21 years of something I said I'd never do.
Because of those four men.
Oh, boy, if they'd known to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah. Well, you showed them for sure.
Was your tie to Scott's Run, you know, like later on in your life, did this museum kind of start a new reason to go back?
Well, so for a number of years, my mother was still there for a while until the interstate went through. And then after she moved, I guess probably for a while, I would just go out occasionally when they had their street fairs and so forth. And then after, of course, the museum is pretty popular, then I started to going back. And then, but I guess there was never a time that I didn't go. Mm-hmm. And of course, I had an aunt that lived up that way. She was at Cassville even after my mother moved. And she would shop at, I think, Solomon's Market out there. And so sometimes I would go up through and take her to the store. And so I was always, you know, around someplace.
So did you know the people who go to the coffee shop before that museum that started in, like, 2011?
Oh, yeah. Of course, like, I guess most everybody out there. But one of the fascinating things was even before the coffee shop, I think John Probst. I tell him all the time. I used to see him driving around sometimes, and I thought, I know that guy. One of these days, I'm going to have a little talk with him and tell him who I am. So there was an article in the paper once about me, and it said that I was from Osage. And I saw him. I used to visit the senior centers a lot. And of course, at that time, I was campaigning. Mm-hmm. And he let me know. He said, I know a lot of people from out there. He said, but I saw that you're from Osage. He said, and I wanted to talk to you. I said, yeah, and I'm going to talk to you, too. I said, because I know who you are, but you don't know me. And I told him that, I told him a story about his sister and my sister. And it's something both families always laughed about. Mm-hmm. And I said, and the other thing is, my grandmother and your mother were good friends. And when I told him what the family name was, he said, I know them very well. And he would say that sometimes when my grandmother would come to visit his mother and bring the youngest daughter, he said, she was so pretty, he said, I couldn't even stay in the same room with her. So then I let him know the connection, you know. So we always get a kick out of that. And then it's like people that I remembered when I was little, and maybe they didn't make the connection, but most of the people out there I've known. Al was good friends with my brother. Mm-hmm. My brother was killed some years ago in an automobile accident. And of course, I knew Sarah's youngest sister. But all of them, we've had some past, mm-hmm. most of them have had some past connections.
What's the story with your sister and John's sister?
Oh, there's a photo, and he keeps asking me, have I been able to find it? But I think my sister in Cleveland probably has a copy of it. But years ago, you would have photographers going through the mining camps to take pictures. Like there's a picture of me, and I think my kids have it someplace. I must have been about 5 years old. And a guy would come through with a pony, mm-hmm. and he'd put you on there and put a cowboy hat on you and chaps. Uh-huh. And I had a kerchief around my head. Uh-huh. And they would take pictures, and then it'd come back if your family wanted to purchase them. So somebody was going through, and it was one of my sisters and John's sister. Now, I don't know why my sister had a coat on, because it was evidently hot weather. John's sister had on an apron, one of those kind that you, like a pinafore, you just put your arms through and it fastens in the back. And they're standing there with their arms around each other, uh-huh. and they're probably about, 5, 6 years old, something like that. Mm-hmm. And that just shows how, you know, everybody was friends, right. You know. So evidently, the story goes, when the photo came back, mm-hmm. and John's mother, I think her name was Mary Lou, and said, Mary Lou, now which one are you? And she said, Mother, don't you recognize me with my apron on?
That's very cute.
So, and evidently, his mother and my family, got a big kick out of that. That's how she described it. And that reminds me of that one article we saw not too long ago, well, probably last year sometime. These two little kids one African American one occasion and wanted to get their hair cut the same to try to fool the teacher so she would, you know, think that she wouldn't know which was which. But John's always asked, he said, Charlene, he said, I lost my picture. And I said, I know I've got one someplace, but there's so many photos around.
Yeah.
But I think my sister must have a copy. But John wants a copy of that. But there's just a lot of people out there. And of course, there's none out there compared to what used to be, because to go out there not to see anyone on the street, unheard of. There were just so many people there. And then, of course, people would, some people who didn't live there would act like, oh, that's the scariest place to go or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I would babysit for people in town. And I guess if they would take me back home and let me out of the car, it'd be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I would just scoot up on that hill. I was never afraid.
Wow.
And of course, there wasn't any street lights or anything.
Yeah.
I just knew where I was going.
Recognize people from those WPA photos when the WPA photographers came through?
I have a couple of photos, yeah, that I have recognized. And as I said, I'm going to show you the thing that I have. And a couple of those are from the a foul. I forget which foul it is now. But then a lot of them, some of the ones that I took myself. But yeah, can go back. It's just really something to go back through and recognize some of those people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a book here that Armand and Gaglia that was put together.
Oh,
you've probably seen that.
They had that out at the museum today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And when we go, and Connie Parks Rice did that book. And we had a committee when I was the mayor to do some things because of some of the complaints that we had throughout the area. The city manager at that time was Dan Boroff, put the group together, Dr. Barb Howell in the history department, and she was the one, I think, that got Connie. And they would just go through and talk to people, and everybody would tell you somebody else that you need to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So we go through that book and see some of those pictures, it's just amazing.
Has the museum done and the Saturday coffee shops, what has that done for the community, in your opinion?
I think it has brought a lot of people together, and then just to sit there and reminisce, and there's always something there that maybe someone will mention. You'll think, oh, wait a minute, and it'll refresh your memory about something.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you discuss it and everybody tells their side of it or brings something to the conversation, it brings back a lot of memories or reminds you of something that maybe you had forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just great to go. Now, of course, I didn't go today, but when I get a chance, especially when it's warm,
mm-hmm.
I like to go out. And then when they have the street fair,
mm-hmm.
that's always a good time, too.
Yeah, I gotta come for that.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, was there any kind of, you know, aside from the street fair, was there any kind of community gathering spot?
No, occasionally, and I don't even know when they're having their, and I think they have their meetings at the museum now, but occasionally I used to go out for some of their meetings a long time ago, but I think those meetings are being held at the settlement house at that time,
mm-hmm.
But there wasn't that much more, you know, to do.
So what else are you involved in these days? You're mostly retired?
Well, mostly retired. I went on the, I was asked to join the committee for a statewide CASA. And so I'm on that board now. I've been trying to eliminate, well, some of the other boards and so forth that I was on.
Okay.
And I guess I'm not, so many people ask me, what are you doing? Because I know you're not sitting still. And sometimes I still feel like, well, I'm doing, you know, some things. During the election time, I was very supportive of some of those individuals who are running for certain offices or campaigning for certain offices and so forth. And I get a lot of calls about, and sometimes I guess it's that people aren't paying attention that maybe they'll call you about something that maybe you don't have anything to do with anymore.
Yeah.
So, And in the past, I guess for since I've been retired, I thought I should get, you know, not be involved with the visiting committee at the university. So mm-hmm. I'm no longer on that. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, in the last summer, I took up knitting, so I do that right. once a week. Yeah. So, yeah.
Is there a knitting shop that you go to for class?
No, there is some ladies. Well, I was telling one of my neighbors that she was talking about doing crochet, and I said, I've always wanted to knit. She says, why don't you come and go with me? So she belongs to a group, and they meet at a church on Monday, mm-hmm. and one of the ladies in there will help you to learn. Okay. So that's what I've been doing. Cool. So that's my Monday. And actually, most evenings I sit and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. I find it nice to do while you're watching TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes you feel like you're at least accomplishing something.
Yeah. And so sometimes I may not be able to watch, but at least I have the TV on and it mm-hmm. some it's not dead silence.
Right.
And so, and then I'll be I like to travel, and I'll be doing a little bit of, you know, a little bit of traveling. Mm-hmm. So I usually find something between the reading mm-hmm. and the knitting. And, of course, all that telephone is always busy, but it keeps me pretty well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I'm going to share with you some of the photos that I have on the project that I did and show tell you how you, on your own time, on your laptop or something, mm-hmm. because it's on the Morgantown Museum.
Okay.
Have put it on there. And there is one professor at the university, and I'm going to try to get with him because there's no voice to it. So mm-hmm. I usually show it that I explain everything. Mm-hmm. But he told me he would help me with a student, mm-hmm. and that we'll just go ahead and put the voice to it. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to doing that. Yeah. And I should have been in touch with him, but I'll probably see him this week and talk to him about it. We're getting together with that. And then there's one student, he's not a student maybe, but there's one employee at the Center for Black Culture. And we've talked about going out through Osage and to show him where different things used mm-hmm. to be. Mm-hmm. And he wants to make some films of that.
Oh, nice.
So, but there's always something that, you know, to get involved in.
Yeah. Center for Black Culture, is that a WVU program?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. And is it mostly focused on local, or is it sort of global?
I guess I don't really know the answer to that, but I would say global because its students, the director for there is Margie Fuller,
okay.
and they do a lot of good work. And a lot of students, you know, go in and out of there, and they do different projects. I know they take different trips, and I know that she's been able to preserve different history mm-hmm. from around, mm-hmm. you know, the area,
yeah.
and not just this area. Uh-huh. So they do a lot of interesting work.
Well, I might like to be in touch with her because I was recently talking with, there's a Black in Appalachia project that's mm-hmm. through, I think it's Tennessee Public Broadcasting, and they have been doing, basically they come to a community and they set up a scanner, and so they ask communities, Black communities, to bring their photos and their records of the history of the local area. And so then they digitize those, so every person who owns it gets a digital copy, so it's preserved. And then they also put that in their archive. And they didn't have any West Virginia yet. Yeah, so trying to help him be in touch with people, like maybe in McDowell County, but that might be a good contact for him, someone at the Center for Black Culture, because they could do a...
That would be a good contact.
Yeah.
Also, other parts of the county, I mean other parts of the state.
Yeah.
Like I have a good friend down at the White Sulphur Springs.
Okay.
And she's active in so many different things, and there's a lot of history all down through there.
Yeah.
I know a person from McDowell County
mm-hmm.
that... There is so much history too there.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
There's a lot of history right here.
Right.
I know last year, and I'm sure Margie would like to speak with you, the one building on White Avenue that used to be the high school mm-hmm. years ago, probably back in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And the lady who purchased the building and was renovating it had found some things up in the attic that was left there from the early 30s when the school was there. And she wanted to know if I, and I thought, I don't know what to do with them. Yeah. And I thought Margie would be a good one. Mm-hmm. They could preserve some of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she even told me later that going through those things, she even found a letter up there that was written by Dorothy Vaughan, one of the ladies in the mm-hmm. Hidden Figures.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And, you know, she graduated school here.
Right.
And that... And I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure they've been able to preserve it and have it framed.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, well, I should get in touch with her.
Oh, she'd be a great person for you to get in touch with.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, and then I, and I've probably promised someone, I have the obituary of Dorothy Vaughan that someone had sent me. And I think the grandson of the man that used to own, that owned that house when it was a school, I was so surprised when he called me. I forget what state he said. He didn't even know that I had ever been to school. And I thought, I can't believe your mother never told you that.
Wow.
And then when some people saw this about Dorothy Vaughan, they sent him this. So I guess he was wondering why. So he called me and then he emailed me her obituary and some other things. But there's a lot of history right there.
Yeah.
But Marge, you'd be a good person for you to get in touch with.
Well, I'll leave this on if you want to show me the...
Okay, I'll go. Let me get my lamp.
Yeah. I hope I have it plugged up so that it's not